you know, try to figure out how people are going to perceive you and what's going to be valuable to them and like lean into that. And you don't have to come with some, I can change your business value thing. Like sometimes you just have to come different. Like if they're, like I said, if they're in meetings all day where they're having to do budget stuff, if you can be entertaining and not feel like you're reaching or being annoying, like you'd be amazed how much people just want to be taken out of their zone. But just thinking through like what expectations are on the other side and like playing with them.
Welcome to the Small Business Storytellers, the show where we dive deep into the stories and secrets of businesses focused on not just making money, but making the world a better place. My name is Seth Silvers, and my passion is helping businesses grow that are making the world a better place. Every episode, you will hear from transformational leaders and business owners as we dive into what has helped them grow and what has helped them stay true to themselves along the way. Also, every week we are hosting live conversations with our guests in Fireside Chat, where we give you, the audience, the opportunity to ask them your burning questions. So make sure to join us live on Fireside Chat on your mobile device. Let's dive in. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Small Business Storytellers. On today's episode, we're going to hear some crazy stories, and we're going to talk with somebody whose journey includes being on Good Morning America, starting out as Disney Imagineer, which you'll learn more about what that is, and also his journey through a bunch of different businesses. So this is a little bit of a non-linear journey, but I think it's important to dive into these stories and see what can we learn from different people's journeys, different people's stories. To do that, I have with me Brandon Kleinman from Los Angeles. Brandon, how are you doing today?
Great. Excited to be on. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we kind of go back into your story, give us an idea of what your life looks like now. Like what projects are you working on this week?
So now I have a company called Time Capsule, which if we have time, maybe we'll get into it. But essentially, it's about capturing and protecting your family legacy. You pick up somebody in your family, and over the course of either 6 or 12 months, they get one question about either their life story or a particular portion of their life. And at the end of that period, we turn it into this beautiful book. And it's this idea that there's all these stories that are super important to your family, and to be honest, also a part of you, that are exist out there and that people forget to capture it till it's too late. And I personally love storytelling. And so obviously there's an origin there from my own family, but it's called Time Capsule. And then I have another company that's me. I'm the CEO of called the Birthday App, which app you put on your phone, it goes and gets everybody's birthday without you having to do anything, creates an instant birthday calendar, and you get to send off birthday gifts with one click, and you never forget a birthday again. Everybody feels special. It's awesome.
Cool. I love that. Before this conversation, before we hit record, we were talking about just like the community aspect of, you know, football games and events. And it's evident that all of the projects that you're working on are like revolving around like community and like people connecting with people. And I think that's really, really important. And it seems like there's like that thread that seems to go through the projects you're working on.
Yeah, I'm kind of a dork about evolutionary biology, and like I read lots of books on it, and just in general, I'm interested in it. And one of the things that I always tell friends is that like ideas based around like logic or why people do things tend to not work, whereas ideas based on emotion and connection tend to work better, just because there's stuff pre-programmed into us. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I try, when I work on something now and these years of my life, I always try to think about like, you know, what we're pre-programmed to do and like right. What people, not what they think they want, but what people act on. So,
yeah. All right. So Brandon, your journey started at Disney as an Imagineer. Well, not necessarily started, but that was an earlier part of your journey, which I think is fascinating because I know what Imagineers are. I love Disney. I think there's so much about Disney that's inspired our culture. And, you know, as a storyteller, I feel like they've just been this cultural voice that's really encouraged people to be more imaginative and, you know, integrate storytelling more into their life. So for our audience that doesn't know what Imagineering is, tell us what an Imagineer is and how in the world did you stumble upon this job?
Imagineering is amazing. If you're a creative person, like this is like, it's the most motivating group ever, but essentially it's a skunkworks within Disney. Everything is super top secret, high in clearance. They invent anything you see in the theme park, creative rides, storytelling experience, all comes from Imagineering. They also sometimes create IP. And there's this incredible documentary on Disney Plus about Imagineering. And just as a side note, I build things, I'm creative, and I'm also pretty competitive. And I had this visceral reaction I've never ever had since or before watching the first episode, because these people essentially are both creatives and like technical engineers. And nobody really knows this, but they invented almost all the things you see in theme parks and movie special effects. Like there is an origin story of just these dudes and like girls just hanging in a warehouse in Burbank in the 60s and 70s and literally just finding stuff on the ground and inventing all of this illusion technology. And, you know, it made me emotional because as a competitive person, you just watch it happen and you're like, oh my God, are these people operating on a level that I could never be at? And it's this weird kind of feeling of reverence and beauty, but also like, do I need to be better? It's so awesome. Like I recommend.
Well, and you see in that show too, that it's not like when Walt Disney, you know, started building Disneyland, it's not that like all of the most creative, talented people from all over the world, like flocked to him. It was much more of like him having problems that he wanted to solve and like believing like, okay, let's put some people in this warehouse. And like, I believe that you'll figure it out. I believe you'll come up with solutions. So it's almost like he like trusted that there is this like imagination and creativity that just needs to be unlocked.
And he was, I don't say he's anti over education, but you know, there's a great story where I believe she was just kind of like an assistant or just a general person who ended up becoming essentially the person who sewed and made all of the costumes of every single piece of the park. But it always seemed like Walt's thing was that you want to get people who are both creative and practical, where like they have an idea and they just go find a way to put it together and not like overthink about the theory behind it and all of that stuff. And any person who makes stuff or is motivated by people who make stuff, like the whole thing's good, but the first two or three episodes like melted my brain. And I was part of Imagineering. I knew some of the stories and it still got me.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. So how'd you get the job?
In college, I had a very large business enterprise that, while not drug dealing, was, call it a little bit, you know, on the sort of the line of the law, but to make it short, I helped people drink alcohol before, you know, the law thought that they were mature enough to do so. It did very well. And then I ended up stopping doing it, which is a story for off podcast. And I had kind of had this moment where I didn't have income for the first time in my life. And I've always been independent. And I was at a dinner, a family dinner, and I was sitting next to a guy and he told me that Disney interns made $35 an hour. And I was like, that's a lot of money. Let me get an internship. And he laughed, like truly laughed for like 7 seconds. He's like, it's all like Harvard kids and stuff like that. And I met you 4 minutes ago. Like, why would I give you the internship? And so I just politely asked him for his email. And every day for the next 17 days at 5:30 in the morning, I'd hop on and write him a super funny email. You know, what's in the news? I won't say his name. But and I write at the end, be like, what day do I start? What day do I start? And then finally, on the 17th day, he sent an email. He's like, I've been bothered my whole life by people trying to get jobs here. I've never seen somebody be so persistent with knowing exactly how annoying to be without being too annoying. Just come in. We'll figure something out. And so he gives me a internship. And I was immature at the time, I'd say. But it's hard there. Every 6 months, they flip the internships and you either get a job or your internship is over. And it was very clear that I wasn't going to be offered a job at the end of 6 months for almost all of my own doing. And so this was about the time that Facebook was on maybe 10 campuses, to kind of date myself, I guess. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I knew that I had to kind of get the attention of people. And I did. I was always pretty deep in tech. And they were investing a substantial amount of money into the parks and resorts. And I went and found Bob Iger, a guy named Marty Sklar, the head of another person who's the head of the studio, about seven of the C-level executives' emails. And I wrote them an email that said, "Hey, my name is Brandon. I'm in Parks and Resorts Online. There's something coming down the pike that if you don't react to, it could cost the company up to $1 billion. I'll tell you about it over coffee." This is like 2 weeks before the internship was over.
And just to be clear, you weren't with...
No, I was. That was the department I was in at the time.
Oh, okay.
But I also only had a loose plan. And essentially, I got an email back, I don't know, 7 days before my internship was over. And it literally just said, I'm not exaggerating, it said, "Meet me on main campus. I want to meet the person with the balls to send this email." That was the whole thing. I had no idea who the person was. It wasn't on the email list. And so I went over there and, you know, we kind of had a good time. But then I explained that, like, you guys are investing in a technology that's going to be dead, and how people share photos and how kind of all this stuff is going to go from there. You need to be more flexible in the way you think about building your technology, because it takes you guys 2 years to build this stuff. And by the time it's done, it's going to be worthless. And, you know, he did what you'd expect. He was like, "I don't even understand the words you're using, but write something up and we'll spread it around." And so I wrote a white paper for Disney, which essentially integrated social media before they use anything, and explained like what they should do. And then 2 days before my internship was over, I got an email from some super high up that I'd never met before that said something like, "Meet over at the..." There's a building called the Mustard Building up on the 405 behind the park. You'll see it. It's like a mustard green and yellow. So I met there and somebody said, "Your white paper went around and nobody really knows what to make of it, but enough people think that you might know something that we want to offer you a job. We don't even know where to put you." And before he even finished the sentence, I was like, "I want to be an Imagineer." And then he kind of groaned for a second. And it was Marty Sklar, by the way, who is in the documentary, who's now since passed. But they made me an Imagineer. And for about a year, year and a half, I went around kind of giving social media, kind of integrating it, I guess, into the different properties. But that's how I ended up in Imagineer.
Yeah. How did you know that stuff? Like, it sounds like you were kind of, you know, I'm curious to like what social media was still early. So this, what year was this?
Like, what is the, yeah,
right, exactly. 2007-ish?
2007.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, so MySpace is still a big deal. Yeah, it was
literally the beginning of Facebook is end just, of MySpace kind of era.
Yeah. So how did you learn the skills to where you felt like you could consult a company like Disney?
Well, I don't know that. Media. I mean, I think you're giving me too much credit. I think it might have been a Hail Mary in a fit of desperation. But I've always been interested in tech. I've always been pretty kind of forward with that stuff. And even though I was being kind of a cocky, over my head guy, I did actually believe the stuff that I wrote. I believed, you know, one of the things that I'd already seen happening was that it's almost impossible to remember this but before social media, there was no transparency. When something bad would happen in like the theme park, they'd be able to cover it up and it would never get out because the news agencies were the ones to report it. When someone had a bad experience, it would die within their social circle. And so even in the MySpace days, you know, you start to see people's stories get elevated, which otherwise would have been suppressed. And so there was this, you know, Disney is really controlling about how they do narrative stuff. And there was this historical legacy of being able to control the narrative. And as we know now that we're in kind of the era of social media, like any company that tries to quash like a narrative that their customer base or their client base is talking about just looks stupid because it's all out there. And so I did have a pretty strong idea that like people were going to be able to share stuff, and that Disney and just all the businesses in general were, as a kind of, you actually alluded to the beginning, like I'm pretty obsessed with storytelling and, you know, who is the narrator, who actually gets to control the facts, how does the audience participate? And with social media, it was very clear that stories were instantly going to become collaborative, and not in like the fun marketing way, more in the like, my word is actually more trustworthy than your word because I don't have a dog in the fight in whether or not this was good, where you do because you're running a business. And so it was more just,
right,
I understood kind of, you know, if everybody's given a platform, what their human nature would look like and how the company would have to respond to it.
Right. So, you know, after your time as an Imagineer, you've how many businesses, I guess, in your life have you started?
Let's a million. If you're asking me how many businesses people have heard of, that actually worked out. It's probably closer to four. But, you know, that four was of a crop of probably 60.
OK, so let's stick with four. So you've started four. What were some things that you like carried with you from your days at Disney that you feel like have influenced your business work and the work you've done in those businesses since then, that you're looking back and you're like, man, either I learned this at Disney, or I saw this, or I just learned it through osmosis, through being around like the Disney culture. Like what stands
out? Yeah, there's this thing I want to give a story about. So Laurel and Wolf was my first business that kind of rocket shipped. It's a crazy story, but I think we have a short time here, so I won't go too deep into it. But at Disney, they're really good at hijacking or giving, telling you how to feel. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that in a really positive way. Like, you know, Frontierland, Tomorrowland, all of these things at the park. They basically went there and they would set your expectations, or they would kind of set what, you know, what they wanted you to feel, and they'd work from there versus asking you. And the most successful thing, we launched Laurel and Wolf, which, just to clarify, is an interior design marketplace. You signed on. It's now a big space, but we were the first person to kind of invent it. But you sign on and then you take a picture of your space, and multiple people will, designers will compete to design your space under a budget, right? And the thing that really launched our company into the stratosphere is when people started, we did the style quiz, where we would show you a bunch of different interiors. And at the time, I mean, it seems like nothing now, but it was like revolutionary at the time. But, and then you would pick, I like it, I don't like it, I like it. And then at the end, we'd say, give us your email. We're going to tabulate your style. And so it did a couple of things. One, it gave people's email to us, which, you know, great. But more, it set us up as experts. And it also moved them into a place where they kind of learned something about themselves and wanted to pursue it further. And so it's this idea of like creating a frame of like figuring out what frame you want people to be in and then leading them into whatever you want to do with them. Like I said, Disney's great. It essentially, there's this great kind of, I could walk, if any of you guys go to Disneyland and I'm there, I could show you the coolest stuff. But the way they build the horizon is enough where not only can you not see the buildings outside the park, but you can't see kind of the shadows and the glares outside the park. And so it frame sets this thing where, and I'm sure you guys have seen this when you've gone there, it really immerses you and you forget that like there's a secondary world outside of, you know, these walls of Anaheim, or there's, you know, a Marriott or something on the other side of Toontown, whatever it is. And right. So I think when you think about first experience with your, anything you're building, like frame setting them, and then kind of finding something to pull them into whatever you're trying to do with them, is something that I took on at all my companies from Disney, and trying to be as consistent as possible too with that.
Yeah. I think that's huge to like really look at like, how are we setting the frame? How are we setting the stage? And even in storytelling too. I mean, it's context. It's the importance of all of the intangibles that people don't know or impacting how they actually show up to interpret this story, that it applies to business as well. Like in, you know, marketing and sales, you know, we call it pre-framing in a lot of marketing contexts, where you're looking at what information is influencing how somebody is going to perceive your offer before they even get to
your
offer.
I mean, we're all playing, to kind of extend it, we're all really playing characters in other people's eyes. Like nobody really knows or cares too much what's going on the inside of whatever you're doing. They're thinking about it through, they're the main character in their movie. And so, you know, extending that frame idea, even sending that email to become an Imagineer, like, I don't know that I was cognizantly building a plan, but I knew that I'd be viewed as a 25-year-old kind of like cocky person. And I wrote a really funny email, like that essentially got them to pay attention. And I think subconsciously, you know, I kind of played into this character where I was harmless and funny. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that they at the time were all in these really serious meetings. And so, you know, a couple of them were like, I'm going to have coffee with this kid. He seems kind of like entertaining. And so I think the other thing is just you know, try to figure out how people are going to perceive you and what's going to be valuable to them and like lean into that. And right. you don't have to come with some, I can change your business value thing. Like sometimes you just have to come different. Like if they're, like I said, if they're in right. meetings all day where they're having to do budget stuff, if you can be entertaining and not feel right. like you're reaching or being annoying, like you'd be amazed how much people just want to be taken out of their zone. But just thinking through like yeah. what expectations are on the other side and like playing with them.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I want to ask about ideas because it sounds like if you've had between 4 and 1 million businesses that you've started, there's ideas that are running through your mind often. And I think as a business owner, we're constantly navigating ideas. I think for me and my story, how I've chosen to handle what ideas to pursue and what ideas I've chosen to say, you know, that's for later, or what ideas I've killed, like that is a huge piece to do with our success. So how do you navigate that tension of like, man, there's always ideas. You know, some people will say like shiny object syndrome. How are you picking what ideas to pursue and not pursue?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's something that I think about a lot. And I've been write a little bit as well for myself. I haven't really published any yet. In this particular, I have a strong take on this question. But I think thinking about what ideas to pursue or don't is actually a framework that's not the right one. The way that I, or for me at least, the way that I always think about it is I don't know anything. Given enough time in my life, I'm going to be wrong about everything I think, say, do, or feel. Like genuinely, that's like my, and it makes it so any risk that I take or move that I make is kind of fine. Because there's not a lot of risk because over time you're gonna be wrong anyways. But for the pursuit thing, I don't think about new ideas. I keep a list just on Notepad of ideas that I hear, tweets that I see that I like. And what I do is if it's interesting to me, you know, some friends like will wait or whatever, but I won't. Like I will not necessarily pursue an idea, but I'll pursue the knowledge around an idea. So if there was like something that I heard about that I was like, oh, that could be interesting if I do it like that. I might spend 20 minutes on LinkedIn or texting friends. I might find somebody who's an expert in it. I might ask for an introduction and I might just ask them 10 questions. And what it does is I believe in generalism in general, because I think that most brilliant ideas are not about being an expert at something. It's about being good enough at two things and then seeing where the overlap is between those two kind of disparate things. And so it's not about pursuing it as a business. It's about pursuing the knowledge around it. And it kind of does three things, at least for me. One, it obviously gives me more knowledge in kind of all these random areas. Two, like it just keeps your energy up. Like learning about stuff, even if you're totally focused on a big project, taking 30 minutes and learning about some random ass thing that has nothing to do with your day-to-day life, it's incredible for like giving you perspective on whatever you're doing and also just making sure that you're not burning out on a very specific thing. But the biggest thing that it does for me is it keeps the practice up about knowing that you can reach out about just about anybody. And if you really are asking them something specific that they are passionate about, they will almost always help you or at least answer your question. In that particular habit, whether you're pursuing a new idea or you're just going deeper in whatever you're doing, it's a practiced thing. It's not some like ideological thing you get better at. The more you ask random people for stuff or ideas or opinions and stuff, the easier it is to do it in the future. And that has been, as a skill set, has been probably the most important one for my Vote to Start stuff. Hmm. And it just promotes action as well, which I think is like the key to entrepreneurship. Yeah. Everyone's kind of the same intelligence. Just do shit.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because so many people are afraid to like ask people of different things. You know, one of the business mentors I have, like their family's net worth is, you know, in the 5 billion range. And I had relationship with them, but I pretty much emailed them and just asked them like, what's the best way I can learn from you? And like, where do I need to fly to like have lunch with you? And he was like, all right, meet me at the Dallas airport on this day for lunch. I was like, okay. So I like literally like flew into Dallas, had lunch, got on a plane, flew back. And it was great. I still have the napkin that those ideas were like that he wrote on and scribbled on and then gave
to me. But that's it. And like you get inspired. And
that
like,
made it easier.
This guy valued you as an audience. Like that, like it also does this weird thing to your insides where like we all at some point even psychopaths have a little bit of imposter syndrome. Like, you just, it's impossible to avoid it. But just being in the room more frequently, more often, even if it ends up being that it didn't go the way you wanted it to, it just, action spurs action. And I forgot who said it. It was, there's like a quote that I read that an entrepreneur is not really somebody who is, you know, more general courage or more intelligence or like better strategy mind. They just, the good ones just basically see everything as a tiny baby step. And like, you know, if you take 1,000 baby steps, you know, you walk half a mile or whatever it is, or 2,200 baby steps, you walk a mile. And like, that's really the only secret of this stuff. If you keep moving and doing this, like, you'll eventually win. Like, that's just how this stuff goes.
Yeah. I think that's huge. And it, you know, the answer to this next question might be connected to that. I don't know. But I think a lot of entrepreneurs, they get stuck. Like, most businesses fail. Most do not grow. I'm curious, after building multiple businesses, and it sounds like after like starting and like killing some too, what are some of the ways that you see people get stuck in business?
Yeah.
Or things that keep them stuck.
I mean, do we have an hour? This is like, if I really was going to pick one, like the one thing that I suffer from, even after all these businesses, is like, it's so fucking easy to plan, like to plan and to use the patterns that you see and to like really make yourself feel like you're being thoughtful. And it's so counterintuitive, but that's mostly terrible because you're planning for a reality that doesn't really exist. And so I'm not saying just jump into everything kamikaze, but it's much better to have an idea of where you want to go than directions to the place. And so it's planning and all of that stuff, like really keeping that to lower than, you know, by, I guess just a bias to action in general is the biggest thing. And as soon as you find yourself not launching a product, there's a Paul Graham quote that I always love, which is like, if you're not embarrassed every time you launch your product, then you waited too long to launch your product. And so I think it goes with everything. Like, you see the warts way more than everybody else does. And it's really easy to want to kind of poke them all up. But the reality is we have no idea at all how people are going to react to whatever we do. And so the planning is much more protection of ego and just the fear of failure than it is actually giving you any value or any kind of, call it a high percentage of success when you go do it. So plan less is what my piece of advice is on those that get stuck.
Plan less, act more. I love it. Yeah. And I think, I mean, you said something earlier that is sticking with me, of just that, like, the more you take action, the easier it's going to be in the future. The more you send those crazy emails, the easier it's going to be in the future. The more you reach out, and the better you're going to get at it too. The better you're going to get at not sounding like a arrogant 25-year-old, but sounding like a person who has real value to add and value to provide.
I'm an accumulation of all the failures and all the successes. And like, you talk about planning, it's much better if you are acting from kind of knowledge and instinct of things that you've done previously than kind of planning and predicting what you think is likely to happen. Mm-hmm. And the only way you kind of accumulate that ability to know, you know, when a hook is coming or when an uppercut is coming, is to just be in the ring and get punched in the face a few times. Like, there really is no shortcut on that. No matter what anybody who's, you know, goes to business school or worked in, you know, watched their dad's company or whatever tells you.
Right. So as we kind of bring this to a close, what are some ideas or some things that you're working on now that you're super excited about? This doesn't have to be a plug all the businesses you have right now, but just what are some things in your life that you're working on right now that you're just there, you know, you're thinking of them when you get up in the morning and you're excited to put some action towards them?
Yeah. I mean, it's back to that time capsule thing. I believe there's this, well, with the pandemic and everything, it made me think a little bit harder about this. But the quick story about time capsule is I did these two giant venture bag businesses back to back with 6 days in between. And they both rocket shipped up to like hundreds of employees within whatever it was, 12 months, which I don't recommend for anybody. It's too much, but like the growth speed. But I ended up interviewing my grandfather about his life story after I stepped down as CEO. And then it was one of the most amazing things I ever did, specifically because not only to get an audience, but holy shit, did I see some of my weird quirks that I thought were foreign and only specific to me come up in hearing his stories from college or how he talked about certain things. And from there, a bunch of friends asked me to kind of do their meemaw and their grandparents or their parents. And so I did it for a summer in my backyard as a fun side project. But the thing that kind of came to me is we are increasingly kind of distancing ourselves. You can get food on demand. You don't have to cook it, you know, cook for everybody anymore. It's just easier to be isolated now. And obviously the COVID that's compounded. And so I think it's really hard to feel connected or like feel like you're part of something outside of yourself. And so I'm really passionate about this idea that your family has this cultural capital, like they have financial capital, right? And they're very big on protecting their money as they hand it down. But nobody really talks about capturing the story as to there's the specifics on like how we came here and stuff. But like we're all products of our mom, our dad, our aunts. And it's like never clear why we got that way. And understanding that better really does make you feel kind of you're part of something bigger. And so with Time Capsule, I really believe that I can create this space, this bank almost, where people start thinking about the cultural capital of their family and where they come from and what they're a part of and their organizations as well, the same way they think about protecting the financial capital. And it's not only like everybody thinks about these gifts as like, oh, it's great for grandma, it's great for mom. But I can't stress enough, hearing your parents do it not only does a number on understanding more about you, but you're also doing it for the generations that come after you. You know, you think about like, how cool would it be if you could hear like, let me ask you a question. When, yeah. Who was the first generation that immigrated here from in your family?
That I know of, it was on my mom's side in like the 1830s, a guy named Bechtolt Warner from Germany to Rhode Island.
I mean, they had great names back then.
I know, Bechtolt, yeah.
But like 1830s, could you imagine like Bechtolt was in, you know, the Weimar Republic, I bet. And like this guy had the stones to hop on a boat solo. I don't know if he had a wife or not. Come here. He probably started like 9 businesses were like, oh yeah, I made horseshoes once. And then I was, you know, selling ice cream for a nickel or whatever they did in the old days. And like, there's all of these genetic quirky things that like passed down that my bet you have in you too, that you would see in some of the stories. And like, we're all part of these, forget even like loosely culturally, but like we're part of these genetic lines that like tell us a lot about us. And I don't know. It'd be so, I think at least it would be cool. Wouldn't you like to meet him? Even if it was just his story is kind of one way about what it was like to run the frontier and come to Rhode Island in the 1830s.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's amazing to then think about, I mean, 200 years from now, you know, my great, 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 great grandson being able to hear, you know, and that's why podcasting is cool. Some random conversation that Seth and Brandon have on a podcast, but then having that in a structured story around your family is really awesome. So I definitely encourage everybody to go check it out. What's the best way for people to find Time Capsule and what keep up to date with what you guys are doing?
Go to trytimecapsule.com. And then if you want to find me, I'm at BK Senior on all social media. But cool. trytimecapsule.com, trytimecapsule.com, trytimecapsule.com.
Awesome. Love it. And this has been fun.
Super fun. We'll have more time.
Yeah, fun to hear your. I know we might have to do a part two to dive more into some of your stories because I get the impression that there's some wild ones, and we might also just have to get some drinks in Los Angeles to hear some of the off the podcast ones.
I love both. A lot of my friends joke that they come to me for advice because if something has happened to them, they can assume that Brandon had it happen to him and done it both the right way and the wrong way at some point historically, and I'll have some type of insight. So you're right.
Love it. Well, Brandon, thanks so much for joining the Small Business Storytellers. To everybody who's listening, trytimecapsule.com, right?
You got it, Seth. Thank you. And I love the podcast and keep going. I'm inspiring a bunch of people. I appreciate that.
Cool. Yeah, thanks so much. Thank you so much for listening to the Small Business Storytellers. If you've wanted to start a podcast and have been wondering if you can use podcasting to grow your business, but don't know where to start, I'd love to talk. Head to successwithstories.com/podcast to learn exactly how to launch, grow, and profit from a podcast for your business.
Again, that is successwithstories.com/podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And if you like this episode, share it with someone you know who would also like it. If you want to be a guest on the podcast or know someone who would be a great guest on the show, let me know. Thank you, and we will see you next time on the Small Business Storytellers.